This is episode 2 of season 6 of the GNU World Order. Hi everyone, my name is Klaatu, and this is the GNU World Order. This is my little OG cast. This episode in particular is going to be about data and where it exists and how to make your life easier in dealing with it all. So I didn't really plan it out this way. It was actually an episode full of randomness, and then suddenly a pattern emerged. So the first segment, let's talk about a nice little nifty command called split. Now, split is a command by the GNU folks, the GNU, it's a GNU util. There might be, I'm sure there are probably other versions of it, but the one that I've used myself and the one that I'm talking about now is a GNU utility. And so the syntax that I'm going to give you is for this one. But if there's another tool that's like it on a Sun box or a BSD box, I'm sure it's similar enough for you to get the idea of it from this. So let's say that we both have a computer, right? I've got my laptop, you've got your laptop, we're somewhere, and for some reason we don't have a network. We have no access to any kind of network over which we can broadcast a very large file, and we don't really have the proper cables that we would need to just do a direct connection, and maybe we don't have very large hard drives. And I know you're thinking, but Klaatu, this is never going to happen to me. I'm always around a network. I always have every size thumb drive I could possibly imagine with me. And I think the same thing, and generally speaking, that's true, but it's that one time, right? The one time you're somewhere, and for some reason you can't connect to the network, and you don't have a thumb drive, or you don't have an external drive, whatever, and suddenly you have this urgent need to get a large file, over to someone else's computer, and you can't do it. So let's just go with that for right now. So let's say that we've got, like I said, I've got my laptop, you've got your laptop, and let's say that the only thing that we have access to in terms of media right now is, well, let's just go with DVDs, because we know that that's a set amount of data that you can get on those, and we all know what that is. So it's like, what, 4 gigs approximately, give or take, but it's about 4 gigabytes for a DVD-R. So that's what we've got on us. Luckily, we have a DVD burner in the laptop. So I want to get a file from my computer to yours, and let's say it's a, let's just make this really simple, an 8 gigabyte file. We try to compress it, we try to compress it multiple times. It's not going to fit on that DVD. We try to overburn the DVD, it just will not fit. So what we need to do, really, is get this file into a smaller chunk, right? Well, that's what split does. So split, the syntax for this is split-b, and in this case, it would be 4G, meaning 4 gigabytes. And then we have the file that we want to split, which would be foo, and then the name of the files that it will be split into, which will be bar, and then it will append an A and a B to that. So if we did that in a directory, we do split-b4g space foo space bar. Then if we do an ls on that directory, we will see that we now have the original file called foo, and that would be 8 gigabytes. And then we would have two other little files called, or littler files, called bar A and bar B, and they would be each approximately 4 gigs. The first one would be exactly 4 gigs. The second one might be 3.98 gigs or something like that. It just kind of depends on whether we were exactly at 8 gigs on the original file or not. But you get the idea. And now we could, of course, burn bar A to the DVD, and then bar B to the other DVD that we have, luckily, and go over to your computer and copy bar A off of the DVD onto your hard drive, and then insert the other disk and copy bar B over to your hard drive. And now you have two files, bar A and bar B. So what do you do with it? Well, it's easy. It's cat. Yes, cat is actually useful for other things other than just listing the contents of a file. And admittedly, one of the ways that I use cat quite a bit is for that kind of thing, where you just say, okay, cat this file to standard output. And sometimes it's helpful because you want to process whatever was in that file. So getting it into standard out is kind of nice because there it is. You can sed, you can grep, you can echo, whatever you need to do with that the contents of that file. But in this case, what you can do is say cat bar A space bar B, and then redirect, so that's the greater than symbol, foo. What that does is it concatenates bar A and bar B together into one solid file called foo. Now, you might be a little bit suspicious. You might think, this is a little bit too good to be true. Well, it's actually not. It is completely true. And if I do an MD5 sum on the computer, on my computer, an MD5 sum of foo on my computer, and then an MD5 sum of foo on your computer, those two MD5 sums will match, believe it or not, because it's the same exact file. And if you don't know how to do an MD5 sum, it's really, really simple. You just simply type in MD5 sum space file. So in this case, it would be foo. So MD5 sum space foo. And it spits out, it might take a little while if it's a very, very large file, but it will calculate, I guess, every bit within that file, and it will represent it as this encryption method called MD5. And if you do that to one file and do that to another file, even if there's one little bit out of place, then they'll be completely different MD5 sums. Whereas if they're completely the same, with every bit where it belongs, it will be the exact same MD5 sum. And that is the truth with split. This was something that I used to use a lot back at a job when I was actually transporting a lot of big files off of actually HFS Plus drives, which in my experience so far, personally, using a lot of HFS Plus and a lot of media files, I have found that particular file system to feel a little bit prone to corruption, I think. I've had a lot of files kind of fail me, and a lot of file transfers fail me from an HFS Plus partition, and particularly the larger ones. That's just been my sort of real-world experience. I don't have data to back it up or anything. I'm just kind of generalizing. So one of the things that I used to do to avoid that kind of thing was that to actually split a file into, you know, foo A, foo B, foo C, foo D, foo E, foo F, foo G, and then transfer those chunks over to the new hard drive or to wherever I'm trying to transfer them. And then I would concatenate them all together and do whatever I needed to do. And that would help me, that would actually avert a lot of weird sort of disk errors and things like that I would run into. So that was something that I'd used back then, and I guess because I used it for that purpose, I kind of forgot about it after I switched to Linux, frankly, because I don't have those kinds of problems anymore with my EXT file system. So I really forgot about split, and then Cobra 2 was asking me some logistical questions, because he was about to do a major hard drive transfer, and he was wondering if I knew of any little tips or tricks, and it suddenly came back to me after a little while that, you know, split existed, and he tried it, and hey, it worked for him as well. So if you're a little bit nervous about split or anything like that, I wouldn't be. It seems to be really, really reliable. I like it a lot, and you might find interesting uses for it. I mean, even if it's just a question of you need to get a file to someone, and it's 45 megabytes, and your email provider says you can only have 25 megabytes email attachments, split that bad boy up and email them two segments, or email yourself the two segments, you know, whatever the task is, and then concatenate them on the other end. It works like a charm. So that is a tip. I hope you learned something from it, and I hope you can use it. Okay, so the next little tip, I guess, is something that's honestly fairly self-evident. It really kind of makes a lot of sense, but for some reason it didn't really occur to me until I was trying to do something, and I kind of had to piece it all together. So I'm going to mention it here, and the real pros and the real people with lots of servers and stuff like that, they probably already know this, so if you want to like fast forward or something, you can do that. But it so happens that I've been doing a lot of work. Well, I mean, you know, I've been doing this work for Fat Chance Lester, right? I've been doing the mixing and mashing and post-production work of all different kinds. And I've been doing a little bit of website maintenance and just random stuff like that. The server that I am hosting this stuff on is Skrillet's server, actually, because I didn't want it on one of my free GoDaddy servers that had ads and stuff like that, because they really want to put their best foot forward, the band. I mean, I owe it to the band, having, you know, since they're lost in the Bermuda Triangle and everything. So I'm doing that, and I'm logging onto Skrillet's server, and, you know, doing sort of the same old kind of workflow that I was used to with my little free stuff, which is to pull the file down the, to your local hard drive that you want to edit it, and then save it back, you know, push it back up to the server with, you know, just FTP and stuff. I soon learned that there was SSH access available to the server, so I implemented that. And then I was on there and doing all the stuff that I was doing, and I realized, you know, I mean, I realized that there's really no difference between SSHing to some provider somewhere off in, you know, wherever GoDaddy is, Kentucky or Canada or whatever. Really no difference in SSHing over to one of their boxen as there is me SSHing across the room or across the city to one of my computers that I've got wherever it may be. So I realized that really I have a shell account on this server. And what I should be doing, of course, is editing all the little files and stuff right there on the server. Well, there was no such solution was provided for that. And I decided that what would be really cool is to get either Vim or Nano or Emacs or something like that on the server so that I could SSH in, make the changes to the files, save them, and then they would be live. And that way Skrilla could use it in the future as well, because she wasn't really doing that either, obviously. So I tried a couple of different things. I got the code from, you know, wgat, I guess, curled the code for Nano to the little server, and I tried to compile it, but of course GCC wasn't installed. So then I thought, okay, well, I'll just get the RPM. So I got the RPM because I know that the server runs Fedora. So I got the RPM and tried to install that, but it wouldn't let me because I didn't have permission to install the thing to the root partition, the user bin or user local bin. So then I realized I kind of knew how to do a cross-compile, so I decided, well, I'll just compile for x86 and upload it to the server, just SCP the binary over to the server. Now, I wasn't sure if that would be possible. I mean, I figured that a text editor was probably simple enough not to really rely on a whole bunch of libraries and things like that external of itself, but I didn't know if I had to essentially make, like, a portable app, you know, a portable app version of Nano or what. Well, in the end, while I was investigating all this stuff, Claudio M. from Linux Basement, he was in IRC and I was in IRC and we were talking, and he just mentioned, well, why don't you just grab the binary RPM for Nano, explode the RPM, grab that little component that is pre-compiled for x86 and literally SCP that up to the server and stash it in a directory called bin or something, and then you should be able to use it. And I realized that he was, of course, right, and that's what I did. I got the RPM, the binary RPM for Nano, straight from the GNU website. I did an explode RPM, which I believe was... I didn't have that command on whatever computer I was on, but I believe I found some kind of little shell script that did it for me or something like that. I forget exactly how I did that. It's fairly easy. It's a trivial task. I did that. I located the little binary called Nano and did an SCP up to Skrillet's server, copied Nano to the home directory, SSH'd in, and I established a bin folder there in the home folder, put Nano into that, and then added to the path that little bin folder, which of course would just be what, export space capital P capital A capital T capital H equals $ path colon slash home slash Skrillet slash bin, and then that will add to your path forever that little bin folder. And at that point, I was able to type in nano index.html or nano whatever.html, and it would launch Nano, and I could make my changes, save it, and it was immediately live on the website. It was really cool. So if you've got any kind of host that gives you any amount of freedom, and GoDaddy isn't exactly famous for that sort of thing, but I mean, if you're running Linux, you kind of have to remember that you're running Linux, you know, and you can do little things like that. I mean, with more complex applications, that would be more difficult, like if Skrillet suddenly got it into her head that she wanted to install Asterisk or something on that server, I don't think that would work. But in terms of the simple things that just give you a little bit more of a robust environment, keep that in mind. So that's another little random tip. Okay, last little data management tip would be something called Flack. Flack and LZMA and 7-Zip. So sit back and get ready, because this is a bit of a story. But I was sitting around one day thinking that I should really manage some of the large media files that I have floating around a little bit better, and basically use my space a little bit more wisely than I was. I noticed that I had lots of directories full of WAV files, or AIF files, which are uncompressed audio. So they sound really good, they're easy to play in any player, but they're quite large, and that can add up pretty quickly, especially on laptop hard drives and things like that, which is basically all I've got right now. So I decided that I needed to make those smaller. Now, the nice thing about WAV is that it's immediately playable on pretty much any system, and that is a big advantage. But the real goal is for most of the WAV and AIF files that I'm dealing with, which are samples and sound clips and source material, the real goal is to get it into some kind of editor on my Linux box and be able to use it and not suffer any kind of quality loss. So, I mean, for some of them, some of the WAVs, if they're really, really random, or if they weren't really that great quality anyway, I didn't really feel bad about compressing it down to, for instance, an Ogg Vorbis file. And that kind of thing, I mean, you're talking about, let's say, 600 megs down to something like, you know, 14 megabytes or 20 megabytes, something around that range, depending on quality settings. The disadvantage there, of course, is that it is lossy compression, so you're losing frequency, you're losing clarity, you're losing bit resolution and all kinds of things like that. So whether that is acceptable or not will differ on what exactly this file is and what it means to you. For a lot of the stuff, that was not an acceptable answer, so I decided, well, what I should really do is just apply some kind of wicked compression scheme to it. So I looked up compression and found that one of the best ones around lately was called LZMA, which I guess is really the algorithm that it uses. My Slackware box comes with a tool called XZ, and that uses LZMA and compresses, you know, quite severely. I mean, it'll make files a lot smaller. The downside to this is that it's fairly slow, although I found that it is much faster if you use a program called 7-Zip, which I think by default uses LZMA as its algorithm. And I learned about 7-Zip. Well, I already knew about it, but I kept forgetting about it. But I've really started kind of using it more because Deep Geek mentioned it to me, that Jason Scott mentioned it to him, that 7-Zip was, I think he said it was multi-threaded or something. So if you compress something, it'll actually use a lot more of your processor to get the job done, I guess. I did find it faster, but it's still a pretty slow compressor compared to, say, something like GZIP. The results of LZMA were noticeably better than, for instance, VZIP2, I mean, in terms of file size. I think I was typically cutting files, essentially, you know, the space required for a file, basically in half, which is good. I mean, 600 to, like, 300 megabytes is definitely a good thing. I mean, it is nice. You're not losing any quality, but you get to keep your file, and it takes up half the space. That's not a bad thing. The issue is that it takes time to compress it, and it takes time to uncompress. And so it's not immediately playable. If you decide you want that sample or that set of samples, then you have to unzip it first or uncompress it first. And that can be a sort of, that can slow you down. Now, cool Unix-y tools like Arc for KDE, and I think they might call it File Roller in GNOME, but, you know, those kinds of things that open up, I could be totally wrong about that GNOME name, but the point being, you've got cool little tools that will actually open up an archive without necessarily having to actually, you know, decompress it, and then you can look through the file list and grab just the file that you want. So if you're compressing a directory of lots of WAV files, like, that are each, I don't know, 50 megabytes or something, then maybe you'll be able to decompress it faster because you're not decompressing the whole archive. But it's still a chore. So I decided to look to FLAC for answers. And I hadn't used FLAC enough, I guess, to really get the total power of it. And so I did some tests comparing, for instance, LZMA to FLAC. And what I found was that FLAC would reduce the size of the file in question, the WAV or the AIF, by two-thirds, meaning that a 600 megabyte file would end up at more like 150 or so. Don't quote me on the numbers. I'm kind of approximating. I do have the numbers actually written down somewhere. But yeah, I mean, it was remarkably efficient. And of course, as we know, flak is lost less, so there's no loss in quality. I don't know that what that means. I don't know if flak requires more CPU to play. I don't know if it means that it has to be, well, I'm pretty sure that it has to be processed a little bit before you can import it into a sound application. I think it needs to be sort of translated, but it's really, I mean, it's well worth it. I literally saved, well, again, I forget the numbers, but it was a huge chunk of my hard drive was reclaimed after basically going into all these different directories full of waves and AIFs and just doing a little bash loop like I go over, I think in episode 5, I don't know, 17, 18, just a little loop in bash saying, okay, if you find a wave file, then make it a FLAC file. Works like a charm. I swear by it now. I'm not really compressing anything in terms of trying to save space with like a wave or an AIF. I'm just turning them into FLAC instead. So if you're not using FLAC, you should. And if you're not using LZMA, you might want to look at it. Either 7-zip or XZ, which is, I think, a part of a larger compression utility kit in Slackware. XZ is, I'm sure it's available elsewhere as well, but that's the computer I've got it on. Or you can just use the LZMA command, like LZMA foo, and that will produce foo.lzma now. So check that stuff out. FLAC, I think, could definitely use a little bit more publicity, a little bit more chatter. I've found that a lot of people who I really expected to know at least what FLAC was, I mean, I admittedly hadn't been using it all that much, but at least I knew what it was and everything, so I kind of assumed, and I'd known about it for quite some time, actually. I mean, I'd come across FLAC files, but I have found that people who I would have thought were comparable to me in the Mac world have no idea what FLAC is. So definitely more chatter about FLAC and AUG and Speaks and stuff like that. I think that would not hurt. And yeah, they're really, really great formats. I mean, obviously, I strongly believe in AUG and Speaks, but also FLAC. Let's just add that to the mix. I think that's a really good one. And no, I'm not going to come out with a FLAC version of this show. I'm not saying that by any means. Although you can get Fat Chance Lester songs in FLAC, so you can certainly feel free to do that. Although those are large files. I mean, FLAC might be astonishingly small compared to a wave, but it's still quite large compared to, say, an AUG or something like that. But yeah, it's a great format. Love it, love it, love it. And I hope you do too.
Space Cosmic. The choice of United Planetary Space Command is all over the galaxy.
Okay, so I've been really bad with listener feedback. Again, I really need to get into the habit of basically getting the email and then sending it to some kind of common location, probably in a cloud somewhere, so that I can then refer to it and actually respond to everything. Well, I do respond to every email. I mean, if you send me an email, I will respond. There's almost no question about that. I don't know. I can't think of any email that I've just not responded to. Comes to mind. I'm not going to say that there's not one that slipped through, but I will respond via email. I like to read them on the show sometimes, but I guess I don't do it with enough, I don't do it frequently enough that I actually bother making it a very official process that I carry through every time I get an email. So what's going to end up, I guess, is that I'm just going to read the emails that I get closest to the show recording date, which is a really bad way of doing it, but whatever. If I'm not reading your email, it's not because I don't like you or I don't think you've had anything interesting to say. It is literally because they're in an inbox on some computer and it's not consolidated because I'm not managing listener feedback very well in terms of getting it read. So I do apologize. But let's see, the latest one to email me. Well, okay, I can sum up actually quite a few of them with just saying that if you wrote me about Fat Chance Lester, thank you. I really appreciate the kind comments. I am passing them on to, I'm not passing them on to the band because, of course, they're, like I keep saying, lost in the Bermuda Triangle, just tragic. But, I am collecting them and we'll send them out into space or something eventually in the year 2012. But yes, I really appreciate the kind comments. And yes, for the people who are asking, it is Creative Commons. It should be marked as such on the website. And the website is astiopod.com/Lester, and that is AESDIOPOD.com/Lester. So I will have, instead of trying to spell that out and trying to sound all radio and military official with all those fancy little abbreviations that I can't remember right now, it would be what, Alpha, and then E, and then S. Yeah, see, I don't remember them. Instead of doing that, I'll just post it in the show notes so you can find the site. And yeah, there are more albums coming up. The next release date, actually, I actually learned this from Identica, because someone told me that there was someone on Identica broadcasting messages on behalf of Fat Chance Lester. And yes, she is an official representative. She's called Fallout Fangirl. So you can follow her on Identica, and then they've got someone on Twitter as well named Lazzy Droog. That's LazzyDroog. So those two people are, I guess, dinting and tweeting. Wow, you never really thought I'd hear myself say that on my show. But yes, they are dinting and tweeting about Fat Chance Lester, so you can follow them if you would like to. You can expect the next album out on Halloween, and that is called Last Chance Fester, which is the zombie-themed album, and I think it's a pretty rockin' album as well. Not as much like Napalm Lounge as it is, I guess, sort of like fantastic alternate universes of Fat Chance Lester, although frankly it's fairly unique, so I think you'll enjoy it, especially if you're into zombies, and I think pretty much everyone is these days, so I know I am. Okay, so Foth, T-H-O-T-H, emailed me, and he's back. I know that you probably didn't know he was missing, but he was. He was, he'd been kidnapped by some group and questioned and let go, but he is back, and it turns out, and I'm not really sure why he wrote me this, but it sure is interesting. Slash Etsy is the system folder and does contain configuration files that are used before the GUI comes up, but it's probably more useful to think of it as the global configs. The reason is many things in your user land can be configured in either. The first example off the top of my head would be Vim. If you have a home, you know, /.vimrc, then it will use that, but if there isn't that file, then it will check for an /etc/vim/vimrc or something like that. So you could configure your own Vim, or you can configure everyone's Vim, and that was just a quick note. I don't know if I said something about that in a previous episode, and that's why he was telling me, or what, but it's cool information. It's good to get clarification on that sort of thing, as always. So thank you, Thoth. Thoth also sent me a story, and I think someone else did too. I don't think I read it. I might have. But it's a story about their handle. So Thoth sent me the story about his handle. Turns out that it is there's a Book of Thoth, which is like a book by Aleister Crowley. And so he kind of liked that name, and he took it on as his handle. And there's lots of, you know, Thoth, as I guess a figure of mythology or whatever, is has lots of different names, as a lot of the things from mythology seem to. So you might see things like Tehuti, Teshu, Techu, Sheps, Keminu, Kenti, things like that. So lots of different names for Thoth, but Thoth liked Thoth, I guess, and so there you go. And you can check more of that kind of stuff out at crystallinks.com/thothhtml. And that's just got some information about, like, what this Egyptian god looks like and things like that. I'm presuming this is on the Egyptian god and not Thoth himself, because if so, then someone with a bird for a head has been emailing GNU World Order, which is, you know, kind of exciting, actually, but also kind of bizarre. That's Thoth, and this is, I mean, more than just now that we've learned a little bit about Egyptian mythology and even a little bit about Greek, actually, because it turns out that Hermes is also considered sort of Thothian. It's really cool stuff. You can read all about it on this page, and it's, if you're into mythology and stuff, this is a great, great read. But in addition to hearing about all this stuff, this is kind of cool. This is what I'm kind of talking about when I'm saying that Handel makes so much more sense to me than names. I mean, I'm sure that Thoth has probably told me his real name. I'm pretty sure he has, and I think it starts with a J, and I couldn't tell you what it was. I mean, I just can't remember. But, I mean, you know, not a day went by that I didn't think about Thoth. Well, that's not true, but if I ever thought, gee, I wonder whatever happened to Thoth, it wasn't like, oh, I wonder what happened to that one guy who had emailed me a long time ago. So, handles, yes, like I said, they're much better than names, so pick yours today.
Welcome to the Internet. Come on in, have a look around. I think you'll find it a comfortable place, overall. There's a comfy sofa. Take a seat, put your feet up. Care for a cup of coffee? No, sugar. Don't worry about paying. Would you like to watch a movie? Maybe listen to some music? That's right, you can do anything you want on the internet. And no one will know who you are because on the internet, people don't have names. They have handles. Zero Day, Nuke Boy, and Porn Star. How about a revolution? Would you like to plan a revolution? That's free too on the internet.
Let's see, who else has written me? In addition to Thoth, a couple of different people have written me, and they've kind of been these people I've never really actually heard of. Well, Larry Bushy from the Going Linux show emailed me and said thanks for recommending Going Linux, because I do actually recommend Going Linux a lot. And I guess I wrote an article online somewhere, I think it was on the Dragora Linux wiki, and I apparently recommended that show there, and he was saying thank you, so no problem, Lair. Actually, I don't know if I'm really that familiar with him to call him Lair yet, so I should just call him Larry. Expistos, I'm probably saying that name wrong, but he emailed me. Turns out that they're coming out with a comic podcast, which sounds kind of cool, actually, and you have to understand that I'm not even a comic book, like, I'm not really that big into comics. I love them, and I respect them and everything like that, but I don't read them all that much. You know, I'm actually more of, really, if anything, a graphic novel kind of guy. But even that, I mean, I couldn't tell you. I can't name an inker or a writer or an illustrator or anything like that. So this is a cool show that you should check out eventually once it kind of officially starts, I guess. I don't know if they've actually released even their first episode officially yet, but it will be at Altered Reality, I think, .com or something like that. Anyway, it's a part of the Fusion Podcast Network, which I believe QSK, which is K5 Tux's show, also is. So you should be able to find it. But it's Altered with, like, 3 instead of E at the end. So Altered. Or no, wait, maybe it's in the middle. Well, look, I don't know. But I'll find out and I'll post it in the show notes, if nothing else. Some guy named Mike Bean wrote me with some questions about getting HFS Plus to play nice with Linux. It's actually a lot easier than it used to be. HFS Utils, or maybe HFS Plus Utils, is in a lot of repos out there. And if you just do an install of that, you can now mount and read and write to and from HFS Plus drives. So if you're transitioning from Mac to Linux, or if you're dealing with Linux on your, I mean, if you're dealing with Mac on your Linux box or via your Linux, then HFS Utils is a really good thing to have on your system. But it's gotten really good lately, so check that out. I don't recommend the HFS file system, and I'm trying to do as many tests on file systems as I possibly can to start to get real data so that I can actually say things with certainty. But just from my experience so far, and one of the things that kind of has helped prompt this, the topic of this episode, I've really had a lot of issues with HFS Plus, transferring large files and dealing with, it feels like bit rot, basically. It's just like lots of multimedia files, and just inexplicably, one of the JPEGs or one of the PNGs will have gone bad. And this was a concern that I had, and I asked a few people about it, a few Mac users that I know, you know, whether they were having any kinds of issues like that themselves. And they said that they weren't. They couldn't think of any issue like that. They're also not anywhere near the, I guess, level of Mac user that the people that I'm dealing with are, meaning that they don't have whole bunches of multimedia files that they have in cold storage for a while and then bring back out when the client's ready to work on the project or whatever. So I don't know how it equates. And just recently, I was talking to someone who is a little bit more active on there on the Mac, on the file system. And he actually agreed that that sounded very familiar to him, and that he repairs the file system fairly frequently. I mean, not every day, not every month or anything like that, but frequently enough to have noticed that it does seem to require that. Bought some application that I guess repairs, you know, the drives. I guess it's not Drive Rescue, but some other. There's a company out there that does a bunch of that stuff. But yeah, it's not something that I really like to deal with. Let's see, Billy Crook wrote me. Great name. Billy Crook still has. So Billy Crook wrote me and was talking about this really interesting idea of vector audio. And I've gone back and forth with him on this, and I'm not a codec programmer, so I could be wrong, he could be wrong, I'm not really sure which. His idea was, you know, that essentially right now, audio being sampled 44,100 times per second is essentially a bitmap representation of audio, which kind of makes sense, right? I mean, yeah, they're really, really small points, but they are points. They are points at which the computer has sampled the audio wave and is trying to redraw it with these little points. And he said, well, why not have vector-based audio representation? And at first I thought this was a really progressive-sounding idea, and I thought, wow, this could be really good. And then I realized that what he was describing was already a reality, but it's from a very specific place, which would be like taking a soft synth and generating a tone from that soft synth, meaning that, you know, you're actually generating the tone off of the sound card from raw data, from raw output, constructive synthesism. That would be a what we could call a vector audio wave, because there's no points to it. There's no sample rate, really. It's just it's generating a tone and then outputting it from the card. So it's an interesting topic, and one that I'm not too clear on, because again, I'm not a programmer. I don't know how this kind of stuff works. I know the results of the different encoders and things like that, but I don't know how it actually functions. So I'm just kind of mentioning it because it was listener feedback, and I think it's really interesting. So think about that, won't you? A guy named Victor wrote me, said thanks, or rather congratulations on the new show title and stuff like that. He also has been hiding out because I never knew he existed. Another guy, I think, named Robert. No, that was more Dancy, sorry. Some other guy, I don't remember the other guy's name, but he wrote me, and I don't have the email in front of me, but a couple of people kind of surfaced and were kind of mentioned that they'd actually been listening to my show for a little while and that they liked it, but they'd never really identified themselves. So I always like hearing from new listeners or hearing from old listeners who haven't really contacted me yet. So if you're one of those people, feel free to email me. I always like to get email and to respond to it. And last but not least, a couple of guys did some promos for GNU World Order, and I like them so much that I'm going to play them. And I know that's weird to play a promo for the show on the show, but I just think they're really creative, so here we go.
There is a third operating system, beyond all that which is known to squares, noobs, and norms. It is an operating system as free as gravity, and as granular as the sands of the earth. It is the fusion of community and technology, of security and usability. It lies between the peak of a tinkerer's curiosity and the summit of man's knowledge. It is a new dimension of collaboration. It is an operating system which we call GNU/Linux. Please listen to the GNU World Order Ogcast. Learn more at ogcastplanet.org/GNU World Order.
Yeah, so that was Pokey.
You're traveling through another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land, whose boundaries are only that of overcaffeinated imagination. That's the signpost up ahead. Your next stop, the GNU World Order Ogcast. Learn more at ogcastplanet.org/GNU World Order.
Join the indifferent revolution in ogcasting. Check out the GNU World Order Ogcast. For more information, go to www.thebadapples.info.
And Pegwall.
What I want from you, I want you to be the same.
That is what you will do. You will spoon feed the news, the same technology news, to everyone. You will not help people. You will not give them tips. You are not unique. You will conform. No, we won't. Join the revolution in Ogcasts. Listen to the GNU World Order. For more info, go to www.thebadapples.info.
Pokey and Peckwall. Sounds like a comic team or something, but they're two individuals that I know from IRC, and they just decided to do promos, and then they wrote the scripts and recorded them and sent them to me. It was really, really cool. Those are linked to from the main GNU World Order site, which is oddcastplanet.org/GNU World Order, and you can download the promos and play them. I request that you do not play them on every single show that you ever encounter, because then it gets boring and people don't like to hear promos all that much, and then we're basically just re-implementing the curse that is commercials. And one of the reasons we listen to podcasts is so that we don't have to sit through commercials, I think. So, if you want to play it here and there, go for it. But, I mean, don't make people bored with them either. But still, they're great promos, and thanks, Pokey and Pegwall, for those. Okay, so I think that's really all I have to say on this episode. I hope it was informative and you know, as entertaining as it ever is, I guess. Be sure to check out Fat Chance Lester on osteopod.com/Lester, especially the Howling album out on, well, Halloween. And thanks for listening. So this has been the GNU World Order. My name is Klaatu, and you can contact me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can contact me via IRC on the Freenode network in the channel Ogcast Planet or Slacker Media. Via IM sometimes when I'm online, which, I mean, I'm often online, but I don't actually use IM that much, so I often forget to log into it. But that would be not Klaatu at jabber.org. And yeah, that's not Klaatu at jabber.org. So, and that's my nick in IRC as well, not Klaatu. The site, of course, is ogcastplanet.org/GNU World Order, and be sure to check out all the other shows on the Ogcast Planet site. They've got lots of different links to lots of different shows that release in Og, and I think they're all really good. Most of them are anyway. So, thanks for listening, and I will talk to you next time.
Die on a strange planet in a strange galaxy.